In a world that appears to be filled with negativity and distrust, it's easy to feel helpless and frustrated. Well, how about a change? How about a podcast that brings positivity to your day with stories about everyday people doing good things for people around them? You found it here. This is the Harmony Goal Podcast with Tom Durth, focused on making the world a more harmonious and caring place. We hope you enjoy it.
So our guest today is Jenny Armstrong. Jenny is a single mom, and she was living a life of hopelessness and despair. And her story tells about the journey from that sense of negative living into a place where she is now helping other people, has a lot of hope in her heart, and is thriving in not only her career, but also at home. Jenny, being a single mom, working a full-time job, going back to school for your bachelor's degree, and doing volunteer work, I was beginning to think I was going to have to do this interview by myself. Where is she going to find time to come and talk to us? So, Jenny, we are absolutely thrilled to have you with us today. So thank you for being here.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Cool. Looking forward to this. I really am. One of the things I want to find out is, knowing and having a chance to talk to you a little bit, I'm blown away at the fact that you were living this sense of hopelessness and despair. I mean, I can't visualize you living that way. The thing that blows me away is that, you know, here, all the stuff you're doing right now has such a positive tone to it. How in the world did you ever get to a point of hopelessness, despair, and all that? What happened?
Well, for me, the kind of the catalyst was this disease of alcoholism and addiction. I, as a young person, found myself trying to fit in, and you know, just kind of be comfortable in my own skin, as many of us do in our adolescence. And for me, that involved just a lot of partying and drinking. And lo and behold, I happen to be a person who, my body does not respond the same way to alcohol as a normal person, and found myself suffering from the disease of alcoholism. And it's a progressive illness. So as time went on, what started out as fun and games and, just adolescent silliness, really progressed into this kind of fatal and futile illness.
So you were down there. I mean, you got into that, and here you are, children at home and responsibilities and rent like everybody else has. And all of a sudden you're finding yourself in this sense of, where do I go from here?
So yeah.
What was the turning point for you? Because I mean, we're seeing you today and hearing this story about your past. You know, what was the turning point for you?
You know, that's a really good question. It wasn't so much of a big deal, but as time went on, it became a really big deal. And I started suffering consequences from drinking and partying and using, and just all of the consequences that you hear started to become a reality in my life. So it started as minor things, you know, having trouble paying the bills, or, you know, having trouble just getting up in the morning and arriving to work on time, being hungover all the time, just simple consequences like that, which really over time developed into much, much bigger elements. And pretty soon it got to the point where the consequences were so insurmountable. I had, over the span of my life, had a couple of driving under the influence issues, then that progressed, and I ended up having continual kind of run-ins with the legal system. I just could not deny the consequences anymore.
So did you feel like you had any options of where to go, what to do? I mean, we typically would turn to family right away, or friends, or somebody we feel like we could talk to, but it sounds like you didn't really have that kind of sense that you could turn to somebody at this point.
I really didn't. I never have really cultivated the type of relationships that you could rely on for that kind of help and support and guidance. And also, a big element of just alcoholism and addiction in general is this kind of self-imposed isolation. There's a lot of shame and guilt that comes along. People will say all the time, like, just stop. Or we expect it to be a matter of like self-will. And this was not, I had great will and determination in many areas of my life. And this was an area where I could not marshal that will in my favor. It didn't matter what I did. It wasn't something I could do on my own. And as a result of kind of the guilt and shame that surrounds it, I had really isolated myself. And there's a lot of dishonesty too. You know, you're not really honest and clear with the people in your life about the struggles that you're experiencing when you're in the depths of it.
Yeah, because I mean, you reference this as a disease. You know, like if I feel bad about something, I go to the doctor. If I feel like I'm not doing well, I go to, you know, like an urgent care or something, or find somebody who's a professional to help with that. Where did you turn? I mean, how did you eventually get snapped out of this? Because looking at you today, I'm still having a difficult time visualizing you helpless. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, helpless is a really good word. So I can just share kind of the catalyst, the recovery origin story, if you will. I had been arrested. I was utterly hopeless and helpless. I couldn't live with alcohol. I couldn't live without alcohol. It was just this tumultuous place to be. I had been arrested. I was in a jail cell. I was on a psychiatric hold. So I was by myself. It's a despairing place. I can just kind of paint the real picture, but I was on the floor of the cell, just falling apart. And I very audibly, sometimes when I tell the story, I feel a little crazy, but I audibly heard a voice that was like, "Get up, Jenny, just get up." I felt this overwhelming sense of serenity that I had not felt maybe ever. And it just kind of enveloped me. I didn't know how things were going to change at that point. I didn't know exactly what it was going to look like. I had no clue what it was going to look like, but I knew something had shifted. I have an amazing family, and my parents were there as I was released that next day. Family had some experience with Alcoholics Anonymous, and my dad took me to a meeting that very next day. And it really set the ball rolling. The tone of my life had changed in that instant. I will never understand it from a logical perspective, but I can tell you from the depths of my heart and soul that there was a shift that occurred. And it was truly miraculous. Here I was introduced to this program of AA for the first time in many years, was able to start stringing together days without alcohol or drugs. And it was miraculous. That's the best word I can use to describe the way that it all happened.
That's amazing. I mean, just the picture that I get in my mind of being on the floor and having a transformation like that happen, that just seems, well, the only word I can think of is miraculous. I mean, you hear about that. You hear about stories happening like that. That is amazing. So your dad took you, all of a sudden had an opportunity to see that there was some door that was opening for you.
It was kind of amazing. So what my experience was, I was aware of AA. I had family members who had gotten sober in AA. I had been around it a little bit, but I didn't really know much about it. And in that very first meeting, people share parts of their story. And I started hearing people sharing my story out of their mouth. I could relate to what people were had experienced. I related to the way other people thought. I related to the way other people felt. I related to the way other people drank. And it started to make me realize that, well, here are these people who lived a life similar to what I'm living, had been living. And now they have they describe living this completely different life that looks nothing like what I'm coming out of. Somebody in the very beginning encouraged me to continue going to meetings regularly. A lot of times you'll hear people say, like, do 90 meetings in 90 days to just kind of get a foothold. And so that's what I did. It was people from all walks of life. It was people of all age ranges, all backgrounds, all educational levels, all genders, all everything who had had similar experience their life had been completely transformed. So it gave me the opportunity to start trust that maybe if this could happen for them, that if I did what they did, and I was willing to apply the lessons that I was learning in the rooms of AA to my own life, that maybe the transformation could occur for me too. And lo and behold, that's what happened.
That's amazing. Because, you know, as you mentioned that, and you say something about 90 meetings in 90 days. I mean, here you are already a single mom. You're holding down a job. How did you manage that? Because to me, that sounds absolutely overwhelming.
Well, I was taught early on, there's some old timers in AA who are really clear about the fact that we, when we're in our cups, we're willing to go to any length to have a drink. And so I needed to be equally as willing to go to any lengths to get well. So that meant committing time, committing energy, committing effort in the same way that I would, you know, running around, getting drunk, being willing to make the same type of effort. In the beginning, it's really hard. It was really challenging and you don't feel good and things are overwhelming and unmanageable. But I knew for that hour a day, I could sit in that room and feel better.
There was hope. And with AA, I've not been involved in like a 12-step program. We keep hearing about 12 steps. And, you know, it sounds to me like not just going to the meetings and listening to people and telling your own story, but there's a structure to it. Can you tell us a little bit about what are the steps? How do they help you? What do they do for you? Just share it with their audience here, what that's like.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have that kind of structure in your life all of a sudden.
Absolutely. It's interesting because AA and really all of the 12-step fellowships I'm aware of which there are hundreds, it's really built on a foundation of spiritual principles. And it is a spiritual program, not religious by any means. The whole goal is to cultivate this relationship with a power greater than ourselves.
Well, when you say not religious, but spiritual, how do you make the distinction there? Is there some distinction that means something to you there?
I was taught early on, you know, the word God comes up many times in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous and even in the steps themselves. Mm-hmm. And I was taught really early on that it's really just a power greater than ourselves that can help keep us sober in the context of recovery work. And really that can look like anything that's personal to me. I have a friend in the rooms who says, if we were all to close our eyes and think of a green sweater, we're all going to think of a different green sweater. And God is to each of us.
Yes, that's beautiful. That's great. Thank you. I appreciate that. So, and I interrupted your story about the step.
Oh, yeah. So there is this structure, and some people even use the acronym of God to stand for good orderly direction, which is what the steps kind of help us cultivate in our lives. So it really starts with the first step, which is this acknowledgement that there's even an issue. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. It's like the acknowledgement that like, yep, I'm powerless. I don't have control over what's going to happen when I put alcohol in my body and or how much I'm going to take. The results, once it's in my physical body, results are out of my hands. And that as a result of that, my life was unmanageable. There were all these consequences that I couldn't navigate.
So if it's unmanageable, you are completely out of harmony with the world around you.
Not only with the world around me, very much with the world around me and my fellows, but also with myself. Like I was so disconnected from who I was, what was important to me. There was a complete lack of harmony in every sense. So there's this admittance that comes really early on and this like willingness to say like, yep, I'm beat. I've been beat into a state of reasonableness. Then the second step is we come to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. And so it's an opportunity to kind of look at the insanity that has become our lives and the insanity that has kind of resulted in all of these consequences. It's kind of a sense of like just things being out of whack, that disharmony with ourselves, with others, with the life that we're living, just disconnection. And just kind of this second step is really just acknowledging like of myself, I don't really have the power to get back into alignment. I need guidance. And for some people, that's just the fellowship of AA mm-hmm. or any community. For me, that was a connection with this higher power, which today I choose to call God. And then the third step is we make a decision to turn our will, because my will was not working, but we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand God. Like, I make this acknowledgement that, like, yep, things are insane. It's an unmanageable. I can't do this on my own. I need some guidance. Really, the only guidance that is always available to us is from a power greater than ourselves, from whatever it is out there in the universe, the heart that beats me, the mind that thinks me, the breath that breathes me, whatever that is, that's always available to me. So being willing to turn my life over to that.
So whatever the green sweater is.
Whatever the green sweater is.
I love it. That's
now I'm willing to put it on.
That's great.
Yeah. And then we get into the meat, searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So that's not necessarily a practice that many of us, just as average everyday humans walking around, we're not out there like taking a fearless and thorough moral inventory of ourselves. In a 12-step program, it's this work that kind of helps us find freedom, helps us acknowledge the harm that we've caused, helps us acknowledge the harms that have been caused in our lives that we had no control over, but that maybe we used as a reason to drink or use excessively. But we really dig in and look at who am I? What principles am I living my life by? Mm-hmm. And get really honest about that and write it all out, which is such a powerful tool and something that I use in my life today with any issue. Write and acknowledge, what's my part in this?
Well, Jenny, one of the things that's really interesting is, as you're going through this, and I really appreciate you sharing these steps with us, one of the things that strikes me right now is one of the things I experience just about everywhere I go is people feeling helpless today. This pandemic threw a lot of people's lives into a tizzy, if you will, whatever a tizzy is, like a green sweater. it's thrown people's lives into a craziness where people feel helpless and people feel like they don't have any power over their own lives anymore. There's something out there controlling it. And what I'm hearing from you as you go through these is we could all apply these concepts, even if it has nothing to do with alcohol abuse or drug abuse or anything else. It's our own personal mental abuse.
Absolutely. And I think it's no accident that there are, I think, over 100 12-step fellowships that are all centered around this design for living. The big book of AA calls it a design for living, which truly works in rough going. Yeah. It's this framework that helps us see where we are in control and where we're not in control. And being able to take inventory of that. In the book, it talks about any business who doesn't take a regular inventory is in for it. Basically, we have to be willing to take stock of the good and bad in our own mm-hmm. lives and our own experience. And be willing to like be accountable to like, what do I have control over and what do I not? Where can I take action?
This is really helpful. Thank you. I appreciate your sharing.
Okay. So then next thing, you take stock, you take inventory, you look at resentments, you look at fear, and you look at relationship. And so you dig into those three areas and then you take that in the fifth step and you share it with God and another person. So this is where we do the work of being willing to like bring somebody else into our mess and get some perspective and get some guidance. The actual wording of the step is admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And so we get clear with the universe. Like, these are the areas, this is me, stock and trade. This is the beliefs and the foundation of how I live my life. Then we can see the patterns and the areas where there's room for growth. And it's just there in black and white. And then we've shared it with another person. We've gotten perspective. And then we move on to like step 6 and 7, which is just this acknowledgement of, here are the flaws. And also, here are my gifts. we basically ask God to help remove the things that are blocking us from our fellows. We're asking God to bring us back into harmony. We can see now where our self-reliance has failed us and where we need God and our fellows to shift the narrative, to shift the lifestyle, to shift the beliefs, just to grow. And then we move into 8 and 9, which is acknowledging the harm that we've caused. And so we make a list of all people we have harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. And then we go to these people in step 9 or institutions. I plenty of people who have like stolen or caused harm to an institution, and it'll go and make amends for that. And you'll go directly to any person that you've harmed and make direct amends wherever possible. When to do so would injure them or others. So we take ourselves out of the equation. We consider, are we going to cause more harm by approaching them? And if we do, then we make a living amends where, you know, we go out into the world and we live differently.
See, that even those steps you talked about, how much a rift there has been even within families and neighbors and relatives, and you know, just in our days we're so polarized that I think though that step itself, or those steps there, are incredibly helpful to people. If we could just take that step, realize that we're bringing harm not just to them but to ourselves when we separate ourselves from others.
From a harmony perspective, so much of like this harmonious action that's so inherent in the 12-step work is about the action that we take, because we can have the belief or we can have the ideal, but if we're not doing something about it, if we're not taking action around it, holding ourselves accountable and going out into the world and showing up in accordance with those values, we're selling ourselves short.
Absolutely.
Step 9 is a lot because you're being accountable. You're taking the action. And then we move into they're called the maintenance steps, 10, 11, and 12. So 10 is continue to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. And so we do a nightly review. If you're, you know, active in a program of recovery, you do a nightly review. You look back over your day. Was I dishonest? Was I selfish? Was I self-seeking? Did I cause harm intentionally or unintentionally? If I did, then I address it right away. And then step 11 is we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand God. Praying, this is an important part for me today, praying only of knowledge of His will for my life and the power to carry that out. It's like, how can I continue to show up in accordance with these values that I've like established with this higher power? And then 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I continue to carry the message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all my affairs. And so that's when I go out and help others, can show up for someone else who's suffering.
A whole different thing than having all that dependence on a bottle of booze.
Yeah, whole different thing. It's really powerful and amazing. And then everything, I can quite honestly say every single aspect of my life after having worked these steps has changed completely.
Your hangover now is a smile.
So true.
I love it. That's great. That is wonderful. Well, thinking of those steps, I mean, if you just went back in your mind very quickly through the 12 steps, is there any one specific step that kind of, wow, I mean, it just that one that just slapped you upside the head and said, this feels good?
Yes. So the first step, the admitting powerlessness and unmanageability. So that's something I have to take the first step every day. I have to be willing to admit I'm powerless. And when I'm trying to run the show, it's unmanageable.
Sounds like my life.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, for me, that's like a daily, we have a little visitor. This is Winifred.
I love it. I love it. For the listeners there, her little visitor is a beautiful dog.
Yes, a beautiful black lab, Winnie. So yeah, so the first step has to be like part of my daily experience of acknowledging, like, I got to get out of the way. Step 4 and 5, like the fearless moral inventory and the sharing that with another person, is in my experience where I've gained the most freedom because I can kind of drop the baggage. And that's all the stuff that blocks me or brings me into disharmony. Like that's all the stuff that stands in the way, a relationship with myself, a relationship with my fellows, a relationship with anything. And so that there's so much freedom in just acknowledging, here's all the areas where I've been blocked. And now I'm willing to turn them over.
So you're getting it out of your head and out there into the helping hands of the other people around you and your journaling and all that.
Yeah. A dear friend of mine says, what we reveal will be healed.
Oh, that's good. That's another takeaway here. I got a green sweater.
You got a green sweater. You just got to.
I love it.
This reveal it to heal it.
This is beautiful.
Yeah.
So were there any others? Because I interrupted you again.
And then I guess the other big one, there's value in all of them, but step 9, where we're making amends. I think that's in our culture today. It's something that I perceive to be lacking just in our relationships on a big scale. There's this resistance to go out and say, like, maybe I was wrong, or maybe what I did was hurtful, or being accountable to the people that we share this world with, even those who have a very different perspective. I can still acknowledge that they are there, but for the grace of God, go I. They're just another creature on this earth that we share at the home.
I appreciate that little overview on the 12 steps. They make a lot of sense. And like I say, I think we could all apply those to our own lives when we get to this point. Because once again, I'm amazed at how many people are feeling despair today and just feeling helpless and like they're out of control sort of thing. So what you are describing, what happened through alcohol, I think is happening through communications these days. We're taking in a lot of stuff and holding it in and need to get it out there.
We're always looking for something out there to fix it. And really when we turn within, that's where the shift, at least my experience has been, that's where the shift happens.
Yeah. And once again, the reason that this podcast was created is the whole idea of harmony and creating more harmony in our world. Has the AA program helped you outside of the alcohol dependence? I mean, what other parts of your life have changed as a result of following these steps and getting this stuff out of your head and into the world and finding that forgiveness and all that good stuff? I mean, where else has this affected your life?
I can honestly say it has impacted every aspect of my life. Really, the alcohol was but a symptom. I mean, the first time around through the steps, it absolutely relieved me of that. These are the tools that I use and apply to every aspect of my life. And there's spiritual principles behind each step that I can apply no matter what's going on. As a parent, as a single parent, and creating harmony in my own family, creating harmony with my kids so that they can go out into the world and bring harmonious action with them. It's kind of cool. Like, it's actually really powerful to see them apply these lessons in their own ways. You know, if they make a mistake at school or they're kids, they're teenagers. So they, you know, when they do something maybe not in alignment with their own values, they can go back and say like, ooh, I need to make amends to that person. And I have a framework for how to do that.
Maybe this should be part of our school curriculum. Not necessarily something forced, but to let people know that these are life skills. You know, I remember in history class, you'd have to memorize dates, but nobody cared about how you interacted with one another. You know,
exactly it.
I love that. And I hope your kids are teaching that to other kids too.
Absolutely. And I think we all teach just by showing up and being who we are and being willing to show up for others, to be of service, to make our primary goal to make the world a better place through the interactions that we have.
Well, like Gandhi said, be the change, you know, you want to see in the world.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Other parts of your life are being affected by that. That's wonderful. Another question I have for you is, being a single mom, working a full-time job, going back to school for your bachelor's degree and doing volunteer work. And I mean, it goes on and on and on. How did you find the time to show up, you know, to be part of a program that requires you to go to meetings.
Yeah.
How did you manage that? Because I think people are always looking at, I don't have time to do this. How did you do it?
Well, that's a great question. I didn't overthink it. That's part of it for me, because I can be, I can definitely get into the craziness of the busyness of life. I guess there is no right answer, but honestly, I feel like when I'm living in accordance of the right path, fall into place. I really didn't have to stress about it too much. I kept the recovery aspects at the heart. I know, and I've been taught, and I've seen being in the rooms of AA, I've seen what happens when recovery stops taking a priority. That's not really anything I'm interested in. It's really easy to go back to the old ways of thinking and being. And so I just really have learned to like keep that at the center and show up to be of service. And things generally have fallen into place. My kids go with me to meetings frequently. A fellowship has grown up around them too.
Wow.
It's really a community of like-minded people. You know, just last night I went to a barbecue with several sober friends from the program and their kids, and we spend so much time together. And so I think it's just acknowledging that it's a priority, and that
like going to the grocery store,
like going to
priority, like going to Costco. You got to go.
Exactly right.
You got to go now and then. Yeah.
Not optional.
I love it. Well, you know, one of the steps that you mentioned before was talking about brotherly love. The way I've always heard of AA is it's a wonderful organization for taking care of yourself as an individual and learning to take responsibility. And that sounds very centered. How does that apply to the AA program?
I think it's foundational. So you'll hear people a lot talk about the fellowship. You kind of were bonded together through this common peril, this common suffering. It's a problem that we've all in the rooms have all experienced. And then we can kind of come together around this common solution. But more than that, it's about showing up for the next guy that's coming in the door. I have to show up to meetings because somebody was there to show up for me, teach and tell what we did to get well. The thing that is really miraculous in AA and other 12-step groups is like this idea of just keep coming back, even if you're not getting it, even if you're struggling, even if you keep going back out, even if you keep, you know, suffering the same mistakes, just keep showing up because we're here for you unconditionally. And we're here to like, it is that brotherly love of people will say all the time in the rooms, like, we're here to love you until you can love yourself.
That's beautiful. Once again, I think we can carry that into our world. Find somebody that you can at least be honest with and show up, because we're going to fall off that little wagon thing of self-esteem if we continue on with this hurtfulness and this sense of aloneness that I'm hearing so much of these days. It's so sad to know that there's structure and there's programs out there that help people. That's beautiful.
And just noticing people, I think that's a big piece of what happens. It's like, oh, where's so-and-so? We all exchange phone numbers. That's a real thing. You see it in the movies, like everybody giving each other their number after the meeting. That's a real thing that happens. And then people actually call you, or you actually reach out when you're struggling. It's that piece too. Like when the phone rings or when somebody texts me and says, I'm having a hard day, I call them, and vice versa.
Wow.
It's not only the showing up for the recovery, but it's showing up for the people. It's noticing what's going on for people and being willing to show up in that space, even when it's uncomfortable, to say like, yep, I'm going to sit here with you in this place.
So it's like a representative of God showing up when you need it.
That's exactly
being,
it.
Being the voice, the ears, the eyes, the mouth, the heart, the emotions.
That's exactly it. That's what we are the agents.
That's beautiful. Going through this, do you ever have a fear of becoming totally dependent on AA?
It's funny because you'll hear people talk about that. And I can honestly say it's not a fear. I know It's a question that comes up from people outside of the program frequently. I think of it in the same way as any other treatment for any other fatal disease. Mm-hmm. If I have cancer that requires treatment, I'm not going to stop showing up for my radiation or my chemo or whatever. Mm-hmm. If I want to continue to live my life, I need to show up for that treatment. So this is the same for me. It's number one, the treatment for me for this fatal illness of addiction. And then the other piece is I owe a debt. I feel like I owe a debt to Alcoholics Anonymous to mm-hmm. show up for the people who need it today. Less than dependence, it's more this willingness to get outside myself and acknowledge, like, this program saved my life and it has the capacity to save someone else's life. It requires the participation of those of us who have worked it and who continue to work it and who continue to see the blessings of it in our lives, because it can just as easily fade away.
So instead of a fear of dependence, it's a love of the support.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
And the love, the respect, and the proof. Because, I mean, you look around and just look at your own mirror in the morning to see somebody who's got bright eyes instead of reaching
a hangover and a...
Yeah.
Exactly. I really do think of it as my spiritual community. And so mm-hmm. I don't think of it any differently as like somebody who's actively involved in a church community or, you know, actively involved with service work or, you know, actively involved with really any community that's meaningful and important to them. I think of it in that way.
Well, with all that stuff going on, I'm going to repeat all that again. Single mom, full-time job, going for a bachelor's degree.
I graduated, by the way.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's fantastic. What are your, how do you see all of this now applying to, you know, your career path? And what is your current career path? Where are you? What are you doing? Where has this brought you to? And how do you see all this applying itself to that new, beautiful, bright future that you're looking at? I mean, we've looked at you from the point of being on that floor to where you are today. Where are you today and where are you going?
That's such a great question. It's also crazy to me to think like that was all like four and a half short years ago. That was what was happening. And in that period of time through this work, so I work in early childhood education. I always have since 2000. So this is my 22nd year in early childhood. And I have always been passionate about working with young kids and their families. This work and this, the life that has come from this has really just kind of deepened that commitment for me. I can truly show up to be of service to children and families today. Mm-hmm. I do carry into my work now that the critical importance of the social emotional development piece, mm-hmm. like we kind of talked about, these are all lessons that can be applied in a school setting, even if we like kind of remove the spiritual context and just look at the life lessons and principles that come mm-hmm. from this way of living. I can show up and be of service today for a community that I deeply care about. And it was a catalyst to continue my education and to finish my bachelor's degree in social work.
Yay. When did you do that? When did you get your bachelor's?
I graduated just shy of a year ago.
So and three now, and a half years after sitting on a jail floor.
Exactly right. And today I am a student. I'm actually a student at Harvard University. There is a program for early childhood educators and early childhood leaders. A participant in that certificate.
Just a little schlock organization like Harvard. How fantastic. How did you land that? How did that happen?
You know, they are doing a lot of work in the early childhood community and doing a lot to elevate the profession of early childhood education from sort of this basic caregiving and really elevating it to a sense of a fundamental piece of the education world. They talk about early childhood educators as being brain architects that really were kind of laying the foundation for young children. I don't know. It just kind of came about. It just
just came about. Woke up one morning and decided, okay, that's fantastic. To think about the fact that if it wasn't for AA, you would not be out there helping little children change their lives. And that's our hope for the future right there.
Absolutely. Yeah. There, like I said, it's always work that my heart has been invested in, but today I can really show up in that space as an advocate. Mm-hmm. Because I have tools and skills that I would not have had otherwise. And not only that, but I have this plethora of life experience to apply when families are struggling. You know, I can see the struggle and I can be in that struggle without judgment because I've lived the hopelessness and I also have lived the hope. And so no matter what the struggle is, whether it's the loss of a parent, economic hardship, whatever, any number of things, I can show up in that space today with compassion and knowing that I have tools that I can apply to kind of be a supportive member of the community, and I can be a resource for folks. And that was not what it looked like for me before. It was more just, you know, showing up and doing the job. But today it's truly an investment in this next generation of kiddos.
That is absolutely amazing. I am absolutely in awe. I truly am, of the example that you are setting for people who feel that they're hopeless. I bring up that picture of you on the floor and in a jail cell and just being inspired and taking that inspiration and integrating it into your entire being, into your personal self, into your family, into your world, into your career, into Harvard University. I mean, we just look at all that stuff and say, what kind of hope you are giving other people who feel down, feel despair, feel like there's nowhere to turn, feel like there's no one to talk to. And now all of a sudden you've given us so many hints and so many ideas and how much these programs have meant to you and how they changed your life. I just cannot begin to tell you how much I appreciate you coming here with your busy schedule. I mean, the way you live your life, as you know, it's not just one moment at a time. It's one thought at a time. And we really appreciate you being here. Is there anything you would like to say to our listeners about just staying the course and looking to a bright future? Anything you'd like to have for your closing comments here?
I would just encourage people that are struggling to trust that there could be something else out there, and just to take one small action. It starts with one small action in the direction of hope. Mm-hmm. Just have faith that it can shift.
Well, you certainly are a perfect example of showing us that that can happen. 4.5, as you said, short years from what it was to what it is and what it can be in the future is a great inspiration for all of us. I thank you from the depths of my heart for participating in this today, sharing your thoughts and ideas. And if you'd like to make comments, you can go to our website, which is theharmonygoal.com, and share your ideas about what you heard today. And let us know how you're going to apply this to yourself to take yourself to a new place, have a bright future like we see with Jenny Armstrong. Jenny, thank you so much. Our blessings go to you and your beautiful children and your family and your new life. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. It was a joy to talk to you today.
Thank you so much for listening to the Harmony Goal Podcast. To learn more ways in which people are creating harmony in the world, simply subscribe to this podcast. See our mission at theharmonygoal.com. And remember, we are all empowered to create more harmony in the world, one smile at a time.